Okay, Ross, see her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Thief 2, The Metal Age, which is a stealth immersive sim developed by Looking Glass Studios and published by Eidos Interactive for the PC in 2000.
Yeah, this is a Gary pick. Mm-hmm. This is in the finally pile for a lot of people.
Yes, yeah.
You know, myself included, this is with Jagged Alliance 2. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just things that's like, why the shit haven't you guys done this?
Yeah.
So this is something I want to do for a long time. Making a lot of people angry. We previously covered Thief Deadly Shadows.
Yep.
Which a little bit like covering Invisible War without covering Deus Ex. That's in 2015, episode 115.
Yes. I think maybe I put that on there because I really wanted to talk about Shellbridge Cradle.
I remember I'd played it before we did it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm still a shooter for Deadly Shadows. I still think the game is good.
Yeah.
I can see the difference now, though, people who went from this to that who might feel cheated.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow it's very different.
Yeah, I can feel it. So we're taffing about. We are playing as Garrett, the infamous master thief, finds himself targeted by this new religious movement, this cult called the Mechanists, and their leader, a strange man named Karras.
Yes, the biggest concentrated dose of that's your voice that you've ever experienced in video games.
It is such an interesting choice.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Thief takes place in this magical steampunk kind of world named The City. And there are two factions here, the Hammerites, who are orderly and kind of represent technology and modernity and progress, and the Pagans, who represent chaos and nature.
Yes.
And it's a bad city. Things are not great. It's always on the precipice of disaster, which Garrett finds himself in the middle of.
Yeah. So many different ages that are not working out for anybody involved.
This is going to get to the chill age or whatever. Mm-hmm. Get to the unlimited salad bar age.
A lot of ages in this thing.
A lot of ages in this thing. This is a first person stealth game. Mm-hmm. You are in a series of 3D levels. And this is, along with Metal Gear, one of the early, like, what codified stealth for us.
Yeah, 1998 was a really big year for stealth.
Yes.
With the original Thief, and then this coming along and elaborating almost exactly at the same time as Deus Ex.
Yes. You know, doing two different kind of ways of doing it. This isn't quite a Deus Ex-like, you know, full immersive sim. Mm-hmm. It is much more stealth-focused, but it has a lot of those markers.
Yes. And it's hard to talk about this because this codified a lot of this particular stripe of stealth play. You know, Metal Gear Solid was all about line of sight, and you could basically play it like Pac-Man. This being 3D and also in this highly simulated world, you know, kind of the differentiator for this for a long time was the modeling of light and shadow with your little light gem telling you where you are. And then also the fact that the materials that you are walking across and the pace at which you are walking will create different amounts of sound that can alert guards. So not just attacks or somebody seeing you and somebody yelling, the actual things that you do can blow up your spot.
Yes. This is a thing where, and I say this as somebody who likes Metal Gear Solid,
uh-huh,
the first one, I think this eats its lunch. in terms of simulating anything to do with stealth. I think that Metal Gear Solid was a stealth game, but I think that a big reason for its success was just presentational.
Yes.
This does so many smart things in terms of making you actually be stealthy and not in an instant fail Sly Cooper kind of way.
Yeah.
You are not just hugging walls and avoiding spotlights. This is the most, you know, definitely for the era and still a contender for the most you can feel like you're doing the thing in the game.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So like this Metal Gear and Tenchu.
Yeah.
Tenchu, like weirdly coming out before all of them, like is about as basic as you can get for 3D stealth or stealth at all without going back to like Castle Wolfenstein. Right.
Yeah. And again, the thing that about this that makes me feel it's kind of crazy is how modern it can feel. There's such a short line between this and Dishonored, which feels modern to me. So there are patrols, there are lines of sight, you hide in shadows, you mentioned. But like, as I mentioned before, getting caught is not the end of things. There's not a font of unlimited guards. There's not a fail state, except for a couple of missions. You can run and reset.
Yeah.
Run and reset. You can go to a different part of the building. You can fight off a guard before he gets anyone else. Things like that. It's difficult, but you can do it.
Yes, it is possible, and you are equipped for it a little bit. But yeah, oftentimes it is just a matter of smoke bomb and run, flash bomb and run.
They also, I don't know if you caught this during your playthrough, but if an enemy is susceptible to flash bombs, you can donk them.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That was really like it was an oh shit kind of thing for me.
It's an oh shit and donk. If you donk them. But it's real fun to go into a room with like six dudes, flash bomb, and then donk them in a line.
just knock out all your donking in one day.
Yeah. Like I turn away, you guys can't see. I'm just going to donk you real quick.
There are
these human guards who you can donk, as we mentioned. This is hitting them with a blackjack. Where'd you get that thing? Sent mail away. This is one of the most blackjackest games that you've ever played since Cards. You will hit people on the back of the head and sap them, and they'll go, oh. And I played this on normal. I knocked out fucking everybody.
Oh, I was Dr. Sleep. I was walking around. I was just good night. I was just Sandman.
Yeah, absolute Sandman in this shit. I was a one-man football league in terms of causing brain damage through knockouts. I love that that's allowable.
Even if I didn't need to, because it's not predictable which way you're going to, like what you're going to run into, you know? Like, I don't know if I'm going to need to cross through this, so, like, I better knock out this guy who's just in a booth. Yeah.
Like, a may as well knock somebody out as a thing.
It is nice that the higher difficulties do take that away from you to a degree.
Yeah. We'll talk about difficulty differences on this. It's well done, I think.
Yeah.
There are, you also, you know, so this is all part of you being very fragile. You also have a knife. You can kill people. You have a bow. You can kill. It's harder. And it's especially harder to kill mechanical things. You're mostly against human guards, but there are also turrets and cameras and eventually robots. I love the robot designs in this. They're weird.
Oh, they're so dorky.
Well, they have Karras's face on them. Like, when I talk about drawing lines to Dishonored, there are so many direct references to this. Like, the robots walking around with the voice of their creator programmed into them. You know, from the Clockwork Mansion is in this.
Yep.
Like, that was a thing.
It just is. Yeah. And they're not like just walking around, you know, saying, I am looking for you. Like, they're programmed with sermons.
Yeah. It's a little different than the ones that the tired voice of Jyn Dosh in Dishonored 2, which I like a lot. But it's interesting, you know, the kind of, I made this in my image.
Yeah.
It's going to talk as me thing.
Yeah. We can talk about that difficulty. So this was inspired by GoldenEye, which is interesting. Higher difficulties don't just, you know, mess with the numbers. I doubt it messes with numbers very much at all. Maybe it's easier to be spotted, etc. But the biggest thing is it adds extra things for you to do in order to be able to finish the mission in order to leave.
Yeah. And it takes away things you can do. It adds guards. Mm-hmm. Like the main thing it does with numbers, it doesn't make guards more hardy, but it will add more of them.
Yeah.
And these are, I like the way that these are presented in world. Sometimes these are self-imposed challenges. If you go higher up, like Garrett just says, you know what? You're a professional. Don't kill anybody.
Yeah.
And like, there's no reason within the mission. Sometimes there is.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you that. But there, it's just like, we don't need to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an authorial voice to the mission design that comes through in the character.
Yes. Yeah. And the missions aren't just get into a place and take something and get out. As fun as that would be, like, see Thief Simulator. I could play a game that is just that. Like, you are doing like a spy story almost. You're doing like an investigation and spy kind of thing. It's really varied. And they will change like mid-mission in response to dramatic events. You're doing shit like framing. I love the framing mission.
It's so good for the fantasy. We just talked about that in the dispatch, but like, I feel cool doing these things and they feel like something my character would do.
Yeah.
Like it's sick. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be stealing stuff as well. There's all kinds of incidental shit you can do. Most of the world building is incidental. You just end up reading notes that people have to each other. It's very rarely mandatory.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's barely germane. It's just a little side story, but there's all kinds of foreshadowing and cool world building if you do that.
And the levels themselves are full of so much incidental detail, places that you do not need to go because they are modeling functional spaces, right? Yeah. And like little overheard conversations, a lot of the time they are for flavor and, you know, just like some of the documents are, but enough of the time it contains like very useful operative information that you want to continue going around and finding these things. You are very motivated to do it.
Eavesdrop is a fun verb.
Yes.
In this game, the levels are really open. For the most part, there are multiple approaches to most things, infiltration and exfiltration. Your path won't be linear, but your objectives will force you to go to most places. And a lot of times you don't know where things are.
No.
Right away. Part of this is with an old school map. This game, you know, and the previous game were famous for this. You do not have question mark markers or a map that lays everything out. You have a hand-drawn map that tells you if you can get the plans to somewhere. It tells you what the rooms are. You basically have the blueprint.
Yeah.
But it's up to you to figure out, you know, the pathing between places. You don't know what's between this room and that room. You know you need to get there. But that room might be locked by like a timed gate, not timed gate, but like a electronic gate in another room. Like you can't actually pass by that.
Yeah, there might be the person who made this map didn't account for the addition of like a combination lock on this particular deal. Sometimes they are accounted for. But like that amount of just like artifice, like this is not like a god's eye view of things. This is something that you as Garrett in the fantasy would be able to get a hold of, right?
Yeah. And as a player, it's fun to do this kind of navigation. This is a classic like Morrowind thing.
Precisely.
Talk about getting rid of that travel and quest markers and stuff. Like, oh, I want to get to this room that has on the map has this kind of feature. I know it has stairs in the northwest. Like there's not a compass on the screen all the time. You have to get out your compass. And you can be like, okay, that door is on that wall. That means I'm facing west.
Yeah.
I need to go generally southwest, but I have to go all the way west first because there's a really guarded room here.
And it forces such a close, detailed, and careful relationship with the 3D space. Like, I like a waypoint. An interactive, Resident Evil 2 remake style map is very useful. But when the game calls for it, this kind of like dead reckoning, vague details based navigation done right is one of the most exquisite things in games to me.
Yeah.
It's why I love Morrowind. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's really good.
Yeah.
A lot of times the maps are kind of mansions or facilities. Sometimes you get compounds. And sometimes you get portions of the city. This is a big difference between Deadly Shadows, which has a hub zone. You need to kind of figure out these vulnerabilities that you're going to exploit to get in, just to kind of unravel the knot of a mission. And a lot of times the way these are made are sequential. This is my first goal. When I go there, on the way, I'm going to find out, okay, there's this special kind of lock that takes me to the basement. The basement will give me another goal.
Yeah.
Like these are not just, they plop down a building and said, do what you will with it, which would be cool.
Yeah.
These are highly designed levels. Not all of them are of the same quality. The ones that are good though are among the best in the medium.
Oh, all timer. Yeah. There's some shit in here.
There's three specifically that I think are some of the best levels of all time.
Yeah.
Fucking nuts.
When this game is singing, like, light is erupting from every hole and pore in my body.
Yes.
Like, I am communing with the angels.
I turned into the cover of The Thing.
Yeah.
In this. And it's not all that way. There's, like, frustrating bits, too, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
It's from 2000. But, like, it's hard to express the heights of this.
Yeah.
When it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're going to want to explore, not just to find those little details and, you know, figure out things that were not accounted for in the map and the objectives, but also you are a thief. You're an opportunist. You're going to be picking up valuable things. Something that I love about this is that some objects are mimics.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh shit, this isn't a valuable. I'm suddenly holding this. I need to dispose of it very carefully in a way that is not going to make noise. And sometimes when you're a chest, you just get a big mace.
You throw a mace against the wall as hard as you possibly can on accident.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things with this that I think are really cool. You get gadgets like a Splinter Cell style stealth. But the way that it's handled economy-wise, I think is awesome.
Yeah.
You buy them between missions. You do not take anything with you between missions. You have a standard loadout.
Yeah.
But you can't hoard. Use it or lose it. And that goes for money as well.
Yes.
So you go through the mission, you gain money, spend your whole budget, you know, because you want to use all of it. You'd rather have and not need it. And you don't know the missions before you play them.
Nope.
So you have to kind of guess based on where it's at, what kind of things you like for your play style and what might be useful. And your success and kind of setting yourself up for the next mission is determined by how thorough you were with the last mission.
Yes.
You were given a very concrete reward for being thorough and exploring and stealing a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you neglect to buy something that you're going to need, it's always available on site. That is just an additional stop you need to make. You need to discover where the armory is going to be. You need to hope that you're going to find things. Like everything is accounted for between these interlocking systems.
Yeah. So we have your arrow, your bows, which are probably your most frequent tool. In this. And there are different kind of heads like Hawkeye here. Water arrows will put out torches. Nobody questions this. Because we're talking about the stealth AI for like just a second. For this kind of stealth to work, and this is true of every stealth game, there aren't very many I can think of where the enemies are actually smart. The enemies have to be really stupid and be the last place team in the peripheral vision Olympics.
Yep.
Like, you can stand next to an enemy if you're not directly in front of them and it's dark at all, they will not see you.
You're doing like X-Files, like standing in somebody's blind spot. Shit.
Yes. Entirely naked cultist in the background of Hereditary.
Yeah.
is what you are, that cultist. And we don't see Garrett. He might be nude.
Ooh, yeah.
The enemies are real dumb in this.
Yeah.
So you do things like they're standing next to a torch, you hit it with a water arrow and put out the torch, and they'll say like, nothing works in this place.
Yeah, and then, lousy draft. Like the water's wet. Like it's splashed on you, dog.
You heard it. And still keep walking. That is the immersion breaking silliness that you have to put up with for to get the immersion breaking bliss
of
the other bit.
Yeah.
Really clever moss arrows change a surface into soft so you can run across without making noise. Super useful when it's useful. Fire arrows are your destructive arrows. These are oftentimes, I found, useful for killing robots. There's another way to kill robots that's like cleverer too, but if you can't get that angle, this will kill robots.
Yeah.
Gas arrows, which knock people out, of course, in kind of an AOE. Rope and vine arrows, which are really similar, but that's awesome. They stick to anything.
This is an MVP item. Yeah. They're expensive to buy, and when you find them, you only get a couple. But like being able to modify the geometry on the fly, you know, with special surfaces, right? Like rope needs to latch into wood, and vine is on grates. But
yeah, it's worth saying special surfaces, but it's not a thing where like the developers made a glowy spot you have to hit.
Right.
You know, it's not Sekiro grapple points. It's anything made of wood. And we did a Dark Messiah of Might and Magic where that idea came from, a lot of the shared development there. That was really satisfying there. That was a linear game. It's so much more satisfying in a non-linear game. Really cool. And then a noisemaker arrow, which these are really rare, I found, but are useful because the enemies are stupid and they'll go look at the doodad that's yelling at them.
Yeah. I love how the noisemaker arrow bounces around, so it is not necessarily determinative where it is going to hit, right?
Yep, it makes them kind of dig around in that area facing away from you.
Also, archery in this game is very satisfying. Like, you've got a little like bracket that shows you roughly where you're aiming at, but like the arrows fall, right?
Yeah, so they have an arc.
So if you're trying to be precise, there's a certain amount of like guesswork, and eventually you get a sense for it, you get a feel, but not always.
Yeah, and you can't draw an arrow forever. You'll get tired. Yeah. Garrett is weak at stuff. It's great. Mm-hmm. You also have infiltration gadgets in this. You have flares and mines and potions. The potions do various magical things. These are also mm-hmm. really useful.
Yeah.
A weird thing for a video game is the slow fall potion is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Taking that and just being like, no, I'm going to just jump down an elevator shaft or whatever mm-hmm. Is really useful.
Yeah.
In this.
It's the inverse of the rope arrow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have invisibility potions for, those are rare, but it's specifically like, I do not want to do this bit.
Yes.
Like, there's a way to do this, but I would like to walk past it, please.
Mm-hmm.
It does that.
And if you have it, for the love of God, use it.
Yeah. Because you have to use everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know why more video games don't do that. Like, kill the hoarder inside you.
Yeah.
It's not helping you. I know we say that all the time, but video games should make you do it.
Yep.
You have a thing called the Scouting Orb. Garrett in the last game had his eye plucked out, and the Keepers, who are an esoteric order of like knowledge thieves, mm-hmm. gave him a mechanical eye. So you can throw a Scouting Orb and then look through it. Nobody notices it, and you get this kind of fisheye, jackass skate video view of guards walking by.
Yeah,
here
I love this thing. This is such a cool idea. For a stealth gadget. Also, you can use this to see Garrett, and he is clothed, unfortunately. Okay. So he lied.
I've never
before.
Looked at him through that as a thing. I didn't want to ruin the illusion.
One must imagine Garrett nude.
Yeah, it would be useful because it would stop the guards for a second, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, if you saw a guy crouching with a sword and he was naked, I think you would react slower.
Oh, it's like an Eastern Promises thing. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Or a Hereditary thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, nudity. Lockpicking is cool in this. It's a slightly different take than standard lockpicking in this. It is not a mini game per se. You have two different lockpicks, and you have to kind of experiment to see which lockpick is correct. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need to go back and forth between both.
Yeah.
Through this. And you don't know how many times it's going to take or which one to start with and things. I think that it is Aaron Signal brought this up reviewing Thief 1, said that it simulates the feeling of fucking around with your key ring.
Yeah.
When you are like might get caught. And I think that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah.
This can cause really tense moments.
Mm-hmm. Just a very smart way to create drama where otherwise there might not be any. I don't know which I prefer, this or the lockpicking minigame. I can't think of a time where there's a lockpicking minigame, but things go in real time as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's rare. The lockpicking in Bioshock 2.
Yeah.
Is like that, the little hacking
mm-hmm.
thing that you do.
It's a little timing game, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little timing game, but it happens in game while you're playing, mm-hmm. so monsters can still get you. It's rare. The important mm-hmm. thing is that it's real time.
Yes.
You know, time does not stop during it.
That is the important thing. About the gadgets, so something that is annoying that I wish was accounted for, and this was before there were interface niceties to get around this, like a little weapon wheel or a gadget wheel. You can press hotkeys to select your weapons, so like different mm-hmm. arrows and stuff like that. But gadgets, you have to scroll through manually.
Yes.
So like if you are just kind of like resting on your compass, like you end up needing to... go past a bunch of stuff to try and get to what you need, and you end up carrying a lot of stuff, including some documents that you need to reference from time to time.
It's frustrating. I have, because I suffer for fashion, I have the 8-bit do NES looking mouse and keyboard. This mouse uh-huh. I've grown accustomed to, but it is certainly Stockholm Syndrome. It's not a uh-huh. good mouse.
Oh no, it's the boxiest thing in the world. Yeah.
It's super boxy, and the mouse wheel is a little slider. It's not mm-hmm. mechanical, so there are no clicks or anything. Playing doing this on hard mode, basically. Again, I suffer for fashion. I didn't want to get a new mouse to play this game. but that is very irritating.
Yeah.
A wheel would be easier and probably better for this.
Yeah.
And I don't, when I'm playing, I like playing old PC games. I can handle mouse and keyboard. I don't like taking my hand off the mouse
uh-huh.
To do shortcuts
okay.
and stuff yeah. for things, even if there were shortcuts for items.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy hints for the shop. These are not always useful, but a cool thing is since you have to spend your money, Mm-hmm. You know, ordinarily you would never buy these because they're not a resource. Mm-hmm. They're just information you can find out through exploring, but you have extra money.
Yeah. They're also very inexpensive too.
Yeah. Yeah. This came out in 2000. So it is too long.
Yes. As a rule.
It is, yes. It is paced not great. For the first half of it, to 2/3 of it, I'm pretty much laughing.
Oh, yeah.
It's so great. You get some bummers that kind of sneak in there, but they're not huge bummers. And then, the back half of it, I do not like as much.
Right.
I hit the I'm ready to be done with this pretty quick. And we ran into, this is actually a thing we ran into with Skin Deep a little bit, where I love MSims, but if you do have an MSim where you are starting from scratch, there's an order of operations to the beginning of a level. Mm-hmm. You know, you get in the level, it's like, okay, what do I need to do? Yeah. And a lot of times that those first things you have to do are the same each time. That can get fatiguing.
Right.
To me, at least. Mm-hmm. So okay, I'm in a really huge level. I'm in a really big house. Let's find a method of ingress and let's get to know this new space. Mm-hmm. You know, you dine on it. It's a long time. You know, each mission, there's 15 missions in this. Each one took me over an hour.
Yeah.
People say that they're shorter than that, but I think they're judging based on having already done them.
Yeah, yeah.
And at this point, they're over an hour and sometimes as much as two.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So long commitments.
Incredibly long. There are 15 missions on this, and after the incredible high of mission 10, I have problems with all of the rest of them.
Yeah. None of them are flawless at that point. It's something that we talk about a lot, that games have gotten better at, which is how to escalate challenge without just getting kind of tedious and annoying.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, the last levels of this are undeniably harder. You know, if the goal was just to make them harder, they succeeded, you know, but not in a way that brought too much new to the table.
Yeah.
Here. And some of that, to be fair, some of that are references and shout outs and stuff to the first Thief, which I've only played part of.
Yeah.
So those didn't, you know, entrance me.
Yeah. That didn't hit really at all. No.
Yeah.
Is there anything else mechanical in this that we haven't addressed?
No, I think that's basically it for this. Anything else will come out in the episode, I think.
Yeah. Let's talk about the aesthetics. This is a really great looking game. Obviously dated, you know, the models of the guards are fine. The animations are ridiculous.
Yes. but the city itself looks really good.
Yes.
It's got an aesthetic to it. We say steampunk city and that might give you certain ideas. Like it feels like it's never been daytime here.
Yeah.
It's got Gotham vibes a little bit.
Yeah.
To me.
Specifically, they specifically cited the 1989 Batman as an inspiration for it.
I could see that for sure.
Yeah.
Really nice there. The cutscenes that we get are really good as well.
Yeah.
These kind of motion comics with a quote with them and kind of limited FMV that comes through live action FMV to kind of do these little story bits between levels.
Yeah. Gorgeous illustration on the majority of these. Very good. Very eraser head and a lot of them. Game sounds great. It has to. Audio is a vector for play information in this. This necessitates the music to be kind of a low bed. It's really moody, kind of backgrounded, just because you need to be able to hear what's going on. But the game does have a distinct audio identity that is outside of the quality of the composition, I think.
Yeah. And one of the games also where I think directional audio is the most important.
Yes.
You know, I use that a lot in this. A lot of times games will tell you that is important. In this one, it felt actually important.
Yes. You want to be able to, has this person passed this doorway? You need to really listen in close to see when the footsteps change channels, right?
Sometimes literally leaning. You can lean towards a door to hear it better.
Uh-huh.
The voice acting in this is really funny because if you're a main character, it's great. Mm-hmm. If you're a guard or a side character, it is, they got somebody from down the hall.
Yeah.
to do it. All of the professional actors in this, the three leads, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can quibble about Karras, that performance. It's the same voice actor. It's Stephen Russell doing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about his choices, but him, Garrett, the main villain, the lady,
Victoria.
Victoria, pretty good. Mm-hmm. The guards sound ludicrous. and the townspeople
You better
sound
not
ludicrous.
Be taffing about.
There's a lot of Innsmouth in them. Guttural yelling.
And like all of the female like incidental characters like sound like a very beleaguered woman from The Office talking to one of those old stick mics.
Yes. You overhear some civilian conversations that are fucking amazing, like in terms of bad performances. But Stephen Russell is a fucking goat.
Oh yeah,
Garrett is really really good. Mm-hmm. He is cool.
He's got like sells a, it. Like, he's got like a smarm that is endearing, which is such yes. a that is such a dangerous balance to try and walk.
Yes, and the villain Karras, same voice actor, which is really cool. He decided to play him as like Truman Capote.
Like Truman Capote meets Droopy Dog.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's a choice.
I love it. I love that he is not intimidating. I love that like it you know, it plays into his motivation. He's just a really weird dude.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. A weird dude with a power complex. Possibly because of his comical voice.
Yeah.
One of the things it reminds me of, and this is a much lesser work of art all across the board, I had an ex-girlfriend who wanted me to watch the Kingsman movie.
Okay.
In the Kingsman movie, Samuel Jackson is the antagonist, and he does something kind of similar.
Ooh.
And it's great. Yeah. Like, just does, it's not the same voice, but does a very, like a voice you would not be intimidated by, and mm-hmm. plays him as a villain heavy, and it's always a fun juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I didn't even know he was in those movies.
He's in at least the first one. I didn't keep going because it wasn't good enough to keep going.
Yeah. Oh, you never found out if they delivered upon the anal sex promise.
I assume they did. I assume that was what the sequel was about. The Kingsman and Her Majesty's.
Yeah. It's about prep and aftercare.
Brown treasury. Yeah. Like, or whatever. I'm sure. I feel like they did get into it. The Kingsman 1.5, the DVD interval. There are webisodes you can watch on Pornhub.
Yeah.
about that. Austin Butler's got a hung dong.
Yeah. Yeah. So the story is really good. I like the story in this quite a bit.
Me too.
You know, like you start out just by being a jobber, you know, like literally the second mission in this is just making rent, which I love, but it turns into this like investigation and spy story. You're unraveling a conspiracy. Like you're going to really varied places and doing cool shit. It has a defined three-act structure. Very cool motivations. Garrett grows over the course of this in a satisfying way.
Yeah. We have character change. He also, it sells the idea of like a Han Solo kind of character where this is none of his fucking business, but he is drawn into, it becomes personal enough to where he ends up saving the world.
Yes.
That is like an archetype, I feel like, a lot of times is fumbled because the story just kind of says it's true and it doesn't feel like it's true.
Yeah.
Like you say a character only cares about themselves and then immediately they're on board or what have you. Garrett isn't like that. Like it takes a while to win Garrett over. He's doing his own thing for a long time.
Yeah.
You know? So this is the development of this. This is the follow-up to Thief the Dark Project. Absolutely revolutionary game. Did a lot of the things this game did first.
Yes.
But it is much more antiquated, primarily in level design.
Oh, yeah.
Thief 1, I find hard to go back to. There are really good levels in it. There are cool things about it.
Yeah.
When I was looking at this as well. So when Ken Levine had this idea for Thief, he wanted to make an action RPG that was inspired by Castle Wolfenstein and Diablo.
Two diametrically opposed
things. Diametrically opposite things. And the dumb thing, you know, you can see Ken Levine being an idiot even early on, is that Diablo does not have a place in this.
No, not at all.
Thief 1 has more of that. There are more monsters. You're being chased by like zombies and shit.
Yeah.
There are more mazes. Yeah. It has more of a traditional game where thieving happens a lot of the time, whereas in Thief 2, you are a thief doing thief shit, and every once in a while something else happens.
Yeah, like they had a lot of intentions for Thief 1 to be more like this, is the sense that I get after Ken Levine left and stopped trying to make a game about communist zombies.
Yes.
Better red than undead. Or the ghastly dark elves must die.
School of Wizards would be okay.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a catchy name.
No.
But like, I don't know, it might be cool.
Yeah, yeah. They just ended up falling back on some kind of, you know, when they had to cut back the simulation, they ended up having to fall back on more tried and true, like, first-person game design, which made it feel a lot more like other first-person games, despite the hints of it being something different and cooler, right?
Like others, but worse, because you're also not hardy or particularly efficacious in those. Yeah. Like you can sneak out behind people and kill them, but like fairly early on in Thief 1, and somebody who is more familiar with it might correct me, but fairly early on, like first third of the game, maybe near the end of the first third, you start running into enemies that you cannot knock out or stab from behind.
Uh-huh.
And like that's a mistake. Mm-hmm. That's really early to start introducing, like taking away your primary thiefy way to deal with.
You start dealing with monsters, and like my understanding is that the cues for whether or not they noticed you were not very clear.
Yeah.
Also, like this is a monster, is not behaving like a human does. I think one of the parts of a stealth game is like you need to be able to understand the motivation of what who you're dealing with for it to map on. So like knowing that they're just doing a job, I think is important, right? For the characterization and the way that a lot of these guys kind of move around. If you're just dealing with fantasy monsters, it's just kind of like, oh well, it's gonna, like, once it sees me, it's going to run up and attack me.
And
right?
Why,
like,
is it here?
Yeah,
like why is it walking back and forth? Why would a zombie be patrolling?
Mm-hmm.
The I thought of something in gameplay that we forgot to talk about that we should camp out on just for a second, which is lighting.
Oh yeah.
You had mentioned the gem. You have a little gem here that tells you the four different states of light that you have.
Mm-hmm.
In this, not only can you control that with water arrows, as we mentioned, but the game is really canny about when you cannot.
Mm-hmm.
There are electronic light fixtures, some of which have switches.
Yep.
And you are invisible in darkness.
Yes.
100%. I think I mentioned that as ancillary to another point, but it's worth saying you are completely mm-hmm. invisible in darkness.
Right. You mean like right next to somebody. Yeah.
And this is really tense. It gives you a lot of feelings until you realize how powerful you are with this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of amnesia feelings.
Yeah.
Of you being right next to a guy who's walking by, oh, is he going to catch me? Mm-hmm. Eventually, you realize this is kind of a superpower.
Yes.
And you can just walk beside somebody and figure out, when they're going to turn, what the tells are, and just knock their ass out.
Yeah.
Or just be dark and just walk past them.
Yeah.
It takes them a minute to get fully alerted.
Some of my favorite kind of situations in this revolved around, I can't control the light. I can't move very quickly. I need to knock this person out, but I'm not at an advantageous point in their patrol. So I need to walk behind them and hope that I catch up to them so I can knock them out before they turn around. But I need to move slowly enough that I don't alert them. Like that is just you need to bottle that feeling.
It's really good. Another interesting choice this makes is that you do not move more quietly when you're crouched down.
Right.
You have stealthing as a specific button, but as makes sense, you're not going to be quiet because you're low.
Yeah.
You're a smaller target to see, but you can walk faster. You can walk at full, height. Mm-hmm. No problem. You're just tiptoeing.
Yeah.
That and the surface you're on make way more of a difference.
Yeah. There's also like a thing where like continuous movement to where you activate the head bobble to imply like a different step that will create sound to alert, but you can just kind of like feather tap forward.
Yeah.
To do almost like a little shuffle to where a step is never activated to move across like hard surfaces without alerting anybody.
Just like really slow. So you have to like pick your window.
The first missions where you find where you run into marble floors is like that floor is basically lava unless you move across it that way.
I love that the hint says that. The hint that you get for that mission is another thief being like, I would have done it except for those fucking marble floors. I hate that invention. Another thing too, like just thinking about this, is that when the guards alert, you have a long period of them not knowing it's you.
Yeah.
The way it deals with them knowing it's you, but you being in shadow, is if they're actively looking, I found this to be true, I don't know if it's strictly true within the engine, is that they will slowly home in on you.
Yes.
Even if they can't see you. So it gives you a way to get away if you can stay in darkness.
Yeah.
Here. But otherwise, they will just walk up to you slowly,
mm-hmm.
Which is also a really tense moment.
Yes.
Good shit. Mm-hmm. We can go back to development stuff. I just wanted to get that stuff out there.
It's worth saying because that's super important to the experience of playing this.
Well, and when we get to the levels, there are highlights in the levels and stuff, but this is a game that is a candidate for you thief your way through the level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can talk about some of the stuff that we do in the levels, but like a walkthrough would be boring.
Yes.
I go into the servants' quarters. I go through the back door. This goes into a hallway. Like it would, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
The actual constituent parts are more interesting than the way they're put together. That's something you need to experience to really get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after going through some of these Diablo style concepts. They got caught on this concept for a game called Dark Camelot for a while. Premises indicated by the name, like you are playing an anti-hero Mordred, mm-hmm. and all of the good guys from Arthurian legend are actually tyrants and psychopaths and stuff. Mm-hmm. And when they started implementing stealth to kind of hit the Castle Wolfenstein part of what Ken Levine was aiming for, that ended up being way more interesting to the studio.
Yeah. And they attempted to do a full version of that, but had to shunt a lot of ideas into the sequel because mm-hmm. the budget and timeline, the Looking Glass interplay, you know, many of these story devs, what happens to them. But Thief 1 still was revolutionary at the point, largely because it wanted to rely on scripted events as little as possible, creating emergent gameplay, mm-hmm. kind of creating emergent gameplay in general in some ways. Like this happens in like Doom, a monster can hit another monster from behind and hit them, but not to this degree.
Yeah. Like if this doesn't have claim to that, maybe Ultima Underworld does, but that's also Looking Glass.
It's also Looking Glass. And like, exactly. Yeah. System Shock is another one mm-hmm. that gets thrown up in there with this kind of stuff. It is really, really early in creating a pillar of something games can do.
Yes.
Generally, even games that are not part of the genre.
Mm-hmm. But like the thing that sticks out, like here is a first person game released, you know, at the height of FPS fever, you know, like Quake and Quake 2 had come out. Half-Life was mm-hmm. changing a whole bunch of shit. Here's a game that looks for all the world like a first person shooter and plays nothing like one.
Yeah.
Right.
Like first person can be a way to do other genres.
Yeah. Like you can explore the first person perspective as a relation to space in a way that does not involve killing as many things as possible. Yeah. Right.
Or specifically not even shooting them. Like eventually you can kill them and stuff. You look at Deus Ex, mm-hmm. that's an option, but you can also just exist in the space.
Yeah. The development on the Metal Age began in 1999, and Looking Glass wanted to like pick up the concepts they weren't able to implement and also address the big criticisms about the original, make the mazes less, or make the levels less maze-like, do more urban environments, get rid of non-human monsters, rely less on jumping puzzles and obligatory combat, right? Like they had a list. They had the game they intended to make. They had to release something compromised. They wanted to make an honest run at it now that they got the basics hammered out. Yes.
Like they listened, which is always good.
Yeah.
So Thief 2 was to remain as urban as possible. Humans that acted on AI routines, and these would make sense to you. You know how a guard might act. You don't know how a zombie might act.
Yeah.
And because it is focused on urban environments, they didn't want to fall back on the kind of the safety of redoing Thief 1 level design. They designed the levels first as these urban environments and then fit the story into them.
Yeah.
Like, so people, you know, made mansions. Mm-hmm. And stuff, made sections of city, made compounds and everything, and then said, what could happen here?
Right. They said that was difficult. They said that that came with trade-offs. It is really hard to tell. Yeah. Like, it feels seamless to me.
Well, they just kind of pulled a great story out of it. Like, having the story come later, the story's just really good. And then the levels are the main thing you take away from this. Mm-hmm. And them starting with that and focusing on that paid off in a big, bad way.
Yeah.
Like, there may have been compromises for things they wanted to do eventually, but the story landed at really pretty good. And then the levels landed at, like, outstanding.
Yeah.
So, like, where they put their resources comes through.
Mm-hmm. The development sounds like a nightmare, but not for the usual reasons, but not entirely for the usual reasons. The working space was in this big wall-less room that they called the pit, where everybody had access to everybody else at all times. And they describe it like somebody would say, hey, check out this thing I just finished. And then just a big ruckus as everybody went over to look at it.
Yeah.
You know,
I couldn't never get anything done in that environment.
No.
This is before the advent of big, huge, loud headphones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, those existed. But it just, I would have to go into like a sensory deprivation helmet for this. Mm-hmm. Looking Glass announced a cooperative multiplayer mode that had to be cut for budget and time. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of being two thieves going into a place with maybe different goals.
Yeah.
And you'd be able to have things like, oh, one of them is in the control room and can like send a guard somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, out of your way, things like that. I think that's really cool, but I understand why it got cut because it's very ambitious.
Yeah. very ambitious, you know, to begin with, but also Looking Glass was not a successful studio and not financially run very well. This was Looking Glass's studio, Looking Glass's last game as a studio. Like, there was a canceled game that was rescued by fans a little bit later on. But Eidos just had to keep on giving them money to keep the lights on. And this led to an arrangement. They couldn't miss their ship date by even a day. Under those conditions, it's actually a miraculous that we got what we got.
Yeah. And it released to critical acclaim and pretty good sales, actually, mm-hmm. but it didn't help Looking Glass.
No.
Their deal with Eidos did not include royalties on sales. Womp, womp.
Uh-huh.
Not here. So Looking Glass closed down. They're a legendary studio within a lot of different circles, but it went away. And basically what we do is we look at the games that were handled by developers who worked on this.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about that, like, rather than becoming a fan of a studio or a franchise, follow the people who make the games.
Yes.
And this is a really good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
They plan to do more for Garrett as a character, but they ended up making Thief, Deadly Shadows, and Warren Spector worked on that with Iron Storm.
Yeah.
That company, which is, you know, a bunch of, and has some Looking Glass alum in mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, there's DNA there for sure. Like, the problem with Thief Deadly Shadows is
console shit.
Yeah, console shit.
It's an invisible war.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's weird that went away. We talk about bespoke versions for handhelds and shit.
Yeah.
The game that is specifically made kind of crappy because it has to be on an Xbox
mm-hmm.
is also no longer a thing now that every console is the same.
Yeah.
You know, basically.
Weird. So series would lay dormant until the release of a reboot called Thief. This wasn't very well received. I have trouble believing it is a war crime.
I think that too. I was asking whether it was worth playing in the Slack with Thief heads and stuff, and they warned me off of it pretty hard. One of the things they said is it just does not feel like Thief. Instead of stealing like valuable objects, you're collecting coins and stuff. Mm. You have the rope arrows, but they only go into specific markers.
Yeah.
On the wall, things like that. I bet you it's a perfectly, like, there's some interesting things that happen to it, and it's like a 5 or 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
You know, I bet you it is not like absolute war crime, mm-hmm. but it's sad. Like, yeah. it is sad that we did not get a good modern reboot other than fucking Dishonored.
Yeah.
Which is the modern reboot of this.
Yeah. Like, literally.
We actually got a great game.
Yeah, we got a fantastic game. Like, that also has, like, it's Garrett's voice actor who plays Corvo, at least in the second one.
literally, a lot of the same theming and stuff.
Yeah.
In terms of, so we did get that eventually, but it's similar to how we didn't get a System Shock 3. We got, Prey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I get settled in my new place, I had no idea this was released. Thief VR Legacy of Shadow released. I have heard nothing about it because it's on VR. I want to see, not because of story reasons, it takes place between Deadly Shadows and the reboot, but because archery is like one of the most fun things to do in a VR game.
Yeah.
And I want to see how that plays out in a stealth context. So yeah, it's probably dumb and embarrassing, but I want to give it a shot.
Yeah, it's at least worth reading about.
So let's get into it. Let's talk about mission number one, running interference.
Yeah. Garrett's old associate, Basso, has decided to get out of the game and wants to marry a Lord's chambermaid. Chambermaid? One of the sexiest professions that exist. Genevieve. This would avoid her indentured servitude. So we need to help him out. We're going to clear a path so we can infiltrate and then call him in and help them escape.
Yes, and this is a very straightforward level that is not obviously a tutorial.
Yes.
You are given a line to follow on the map, and you do. Like, there's an upstairs you can go to, but, like, it's heavily guarded. You don't have any business up there.
Yeah, except you can pick up some treasure.
Well, yeah.
You know, it's cool that you can optionally do it if you want. There's no shopping phase before this. You're just given, like, a standard loadout that's very minimal for this. You go through, you unlock it, and once you do, you have to whistle for Basso, but it has to be where he can hear it.
So like right next to the entrance of the level.
Yeah, I kept going up to the balcony, you know, thinking that would work. But I basically had to walk all the way I came in.
Yeah.
Well, and just like stand in his face and whistle at it.
Walk right next to him, whistle straight into his ear.
Show him the whistle to signal to him. It doesn't actually work. It's one solid piece. Sorry.
Yeah.
I made the holes with a pencil, actually.
I'm just blowing into a potato.
Yeah. Whoops. Sorry. Sorry, Basso. Sorry. Yeah. So this is creepy, has this element of dread, but there's not a twist to this. This is just standard thief shit.
Yeah, this is...
We haven't
this
even
is,
gotten to the main plot yet.
Yeah, this is not a setup or anything. Like, this doesn't like have anything to do with what happens later. Like, you will later when you're in a police station, like, hear somebody from this being interrogated. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you just ask, like, hey, just this woman's missing. What happened? And I don't know what happened. But yeah, no, it is just Garrett helping out a buddy who happens to have given you a very straightforward thing to do by tracing a line. So you don't need to worry about like the navigation side of things.
It's useful. The 1-2 punch of the first two missions of this are very useful as tutorials.
Yes.
Mission 2, this is one of the three I put in the all timer.
Oh so, God. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this is great. It's called shipping ... and receiving.
Mm-hmm.
Title's a little dorky, but the idea is, there hasn't been a lot of work for a thief. There's a new sheriff in town, Sheriff Truitt, and they've started cracking down. So you need to go loot a warehouse to make your rent.
Yeah.
Here. And they just stick you in a zone. There are two buildings, Building A and Building B. And there is a ship that is parked here and everything. There's a lot of stuff, and it is just open-ended. You are given a goal to get $500 worth of loot.
Yes.
And that's it.
And then set loose in this place that is patrolled like a bunch of warehouses. But it is not just like industrial zone dot level. And this, like, these warehouses are also used as like workshops and stuff for like individual businesses.
You're infiltrating a WeWork.
Yeah, exactly. And so like there's a ton of character to each of these individual little stalls. You're finding like miniature stories about like life and business in the city. You know, and like all of these individual just kind of like entanglements that people have and like the weird illegal shit that they're doing in their storage units.
It's also having that you just have to get a minimum amount of money. Goal is so good because you play this level until it's done. A lot of these levels are like chicken wings.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're done when you want them to be done. You can just keep working on little bits.
Yeah.
And it's up to you to throw them away. Other people have different experiences with this level, depending on how completionist you want to be through it.
Yeah.
The gimmick to this warehouse is that all of the doors are controlled from a central repository, kind of like a room where you dial in combos and only one door can be opened at a time. Which is very funny. They also have little guard stations where you can put in new combos, which is more of a player conceit.
Yeah. You do need to pickpocket a key to those off of guards, or, you know, if you're going around putting people to sleep, unburdening them, because falling over on your keys is really painful.
Yeah, you don't want it to happen to them, and they're going to fall over.
Yeah.
Now, we didn't mention this before because it's a minor mechanic, but you can pickpocket.
Yes.
As well. You can take anything a guard's carrying without them knowing if they don't see you.
Including the arrows off of their back so they can't shoot you.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
So things are going bad, as we mentioned. Businesses are failing. You know, so there's this big illicit spice trade. We're also going to see the rise of the principal antagonist. The Mechanist. They have basically the second building. Is largely theirs, even though they have some fingers in the first building as well. We don't get a whole lot of their plotting here. We just see that they're a splinter sect of the Hammerites, and they're growing in power.
Yes. And they are like one of the only things that is keeping some of the merchants in the city afloat, right? Like, some of the businesses that you find are like either like artifacts dealers or like a lens grinder, you know, who's like making parts for their machines. And it's unclear. And he's like, I have no idea what they want this for, but this is the biggest lens I've ever made.
Yeah. And it's expensive. So you want to take it.
Yeah.
Really fun. Like, fun laid out, really, really good. You are making those shuttle runs back to the initial control room at first, which can get a little tedious. Once you find out that there are the little side rooms that do this, it gets a lot easier.
Yes. And
also, the room numbers and their codes are labeled on your map once you find them out.
Yes, which is very good. So you don't have to do any shuttle runs or write stuff down yourself. Something about the map is you can just click on it and then leave your own little note there too, which is quite nice. And also the map screen, if you scroll to the very end of it, has a little notes section, like the back of a Sega Genesis manual.
Yes, yeah, you can write down whatever you like, your codes. The kind of big optional goal in this is, you know, to get the most money is to go get in the pirate ship, the ship captain, the spice smuggler, get onto his ship and get a cut of his spice, get a big chunk of money from that.
Yeah. He's corrupt. Like, he's corrupt and involved with the harbor master. So, like, you think that you get on the ship and that's where all the stuff is going to be. It's a diary that tells you where among the crates the other half of the profits is. So you can steal the harbor master's share of the profits and then also the captain's.
You go into one of the things, there's a recording studio you break into and you steal the compositions that have not been sold yet. Love that. Like, what do you mean you wrote this?
Little bootlegs. There is the most famous butcher who sells, like, you know, the best steaks in the entire world. You break into his unit and he's got cages of big spiders. He's selling spider meat.
Yeah. And there's a button that you click because it's a button in a video game, and it unleashes the spiders on you. And if you run away, the spiders will just kind of be around for the rest of the level. It's real great.
Yeah. What is the rib witch made of? Pig? Yeah. No, think smaller, more legs.
More legs, yeah. So we get mission 3 framed. Client comes in and approaches Garrett for a job. You need to break into Shoals Gate station facility and frame Lieutenant Hagen for stealing evidence.
Yes.
This is the thing that's going to start kind of putting us on the trail of our false antagonist, Sheriff Truart.
Yes, Sheriff Gorman Truart. And in the briefing for this, Garrett's like, I've been wanting to try and break into Shoals Gate Station, so I might as well take this.
Yeah.
Like, the maniac has been planning to break into a police station.
Yeah, and we later do the bank, and he's like, yeah, I've done the bank. Like, I must be a master thief. I've gotten into the ultimate vault of this.
Yeah.
And this is the first, this mission's complicated.
Yeah.
We need to go into evidence lockup, grab evidence, move it to Hagen's office, and leave one of Hagen's things in lockup.
Yeah.
So to finger him specifically.
Yes. And also, you don't want anybody to get suspicious that somebody might have manufactured this. So you need to do this without killing or subduing more than 5 guards.
I think 5 guards die that night, it's not suspicious.
Yeah, that's just regular attrition.
Yeah. Just a high churn. It's not a good job. Nobody wants to work anymore.
5 fatherless children. Just the cost of doing business.
I was making orphans.
God. So there's a sign posted way into the building, like the front gate. You have to cross a drawbridge to get to it. It is completely covered by these security cameras, these mechanical faces. Your map gives you, details about the sewers that go beneath this. So you can get into an unmanned utility building and then swim all the way through. And some of the stretches are very long. You're going to be dipping a little bit into your health.
They give you a breath potion right before you get in, and it doesn't tell you what a breath potion does if you haven't played the first one. This refills your breath. It doesn't make it so you don't use your breath, so don't use it before you get in.
Yeah.
These cameras that have faces on them, they are slow to move, and they take a beat before they notice you, and you're safe under them.
And you can tell. They have, like, a little color indicator. Basically, green's all good. There's orange for, like, you're standing in the wrong place, and then at red, they make noises and stuff.
They alert.
Yeah. And you can basically stand right underneath them and you're fine.
Yeah. They don't look down.
Yeah.
Unlike most stealth games where people don't look up. Weirdly, in this game, they do look up.
Yeah.
You're not invisible by being in a higher plane.
Yeah.
This is a big area. There's a lot of things to do. You have a complicated goal that's going to put you through a lot of the level.
Yeah. Yes. And at least on normal, you don't have to go to a lot of it. Like, you can go down into the cell blocks just to see. And the prisoners have these voice-acted little rants. You can overhear an interrogation happening. And that is separate from, like, the little conference room where the witness is being questioned, right?
Yeah. Cool secret. There have been secrets in these levels as well. This thing you're ranked on. at the end. This one has an ice. You go into an archery range, and your character will be like, I could stand to bone up on my archery. If you make the hardest target, it opens up a thing. If you walk up to it, it's because there's a button there. On there. Somebody is like, get a little reward, where if you are the best guard who does this, you get some arrows, some additional arrows. Water arrows, which I assume you send to thirsty guards.
It's so funny, like, where you find water arrows, because sometimes they're in fountains, and when you take them, the fountain stops working.
Yeah, same with moss arrows. Like, moss arrows will be just plant life.
Yeah, and at least one point, I have a bullet point about this, but, like, when you're going through, like, the bullpen, like, the offices, some of the desks just have water arrows. Like, people are sucking off the arrows instead of water bottles.
The thing I was thinking about is maybe these are just sources of water that Garrett is making into water arrows.
Yeah.
And he sees them as water arrows, like a cartoon might see a cat as a big steak.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, not sure. We get Higgins' handkerchief and read his diary and find out there's dissension. Truart is a zealot. He's been killing pagans after this. Pagans are, again, the kind of wildlings of this. The antagonist of the first game, largely. And Lieutenant Hagen is completely on board. Lieutenant Mosley is resisting this.
Mosley. and you go to Lieutenant Mosley's office, and you can, you know, go through the trash and see that although she is assigned to the pagan case, you know, to trying to stamp out their influence in the city, she has sympathies. Like, she even has, like, plant life growing inside of her inside her quarters there. You know, she is working with them, and, you know, she talks about how she's worried for her garden. Like, plants are not growing in the city. And her coworkers are increasingly, like, the police force is no longer, like, people who, you know, signed up to do this job out of principle. It's like thugs that they, it's thugs that they, that she wants arrested, who have been conscripted because they're going to do the violence that Truart wants them to do.
There is, in this lineage of games and developers, there's oftentimes, like, a duality thing.
Yeah.
You know, you end up with BioShock being about, you know, objectivism and then collectivism in the second one.
Yeah.
Thief, it's with nature and then kind of technology.
Yeah.
Is the a lot of these worlds are run on an axis through this.
Yeah.
So the evidence room is locked behind several layers of security. You need to get a key for the lieutenant's office and a code from the records room to do this. And the way up there has some mechanical faces you have to skirt around. When you take the lockbox and leave Higgins' handkerchief in the locker and switch them, you're basically able to escape. You can just do it through the front gate. So you can exfiltrate is fine.
Yeah, you can deactivate all of the security on the way out.
Yeah. We get our kind of first switching things up mission here with mission 4, ambush. I like this. Apparently people online do not like this very much.
I can see how...
This felt like a cool change of pace to me.
Yeah, I liked this, and I like that it came early, right? Like, we've done a couple of, like, stealthy, like, infiltration thievery kind of things. I think that this is really cool because it gives you just an entire, like, the central city to go through, and it's forcing you to think on your feet and get through, like, a kind of, like, cascading series of bottlenecks.
Yeah.
It was fun to try and figure out how to untie these knots.
This was also... where I had to YOLO it at the end.
Oh, God,
like, throw a speed potion and run away from people. You know, and it was fine. It worked out. But it was, I think people don't like this because you don't spend a lot of time exploring and looting. Like, but there's not a lot of things you get.
Yeah, there are houses that you pass through and you can pick up some stuff, but that's not the emphasis of this.
And it's risky, too. So, like, basically, an associate of Garrett's has ratted him out and lured you in an ambush at the pub, so you had to get away. Sheriff Truart has it in for you specifically, and the entire guard is looking for you. So you're going to hide out in a graveyard, but you need to get your apartment and get a key.
Yes.
To get in there first.
Yeah. And the map is not entirely clear. What appears to be clear passageways, roadways, they are closed. Like, parts of the city are on lockdown. So you have to engage with the verticality to get up and over them, or swim in the canals beneath them, or find a, you know, an open window into an explorable house to, like, cross the block.
Yeah, and neat. Like, works well. You get to your apartment, you get the key to Shellbridge, the cemetery, from your little hidden room. This hidden room has anything that you had in the last mission.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and, I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you had to cross the city back to get to Shale Bridge. This is lousy with guards. This mm-hmm. is where I ended up running. With a speed potion.
And it's a super dramatic, that is a super dramatic way for that mission to go, right? Yeah. Like, no matter how good of a thief you are, if you're out on the streets and there are enough people, like, yeah, man, you're going to be seen. You're going to have invisible. To run. Yeah.
Yeah. And like combat, when you are forced to do it in this game, I eventually figured out a way to do it without dying, without getting hit. Like, you're much weaker. The enemy AI is stupid. You get to hit them in the head and then back up a couple steps and they'll swing into the air.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
that this falls apart as soon as there's more than one enemy. Yeah. And the sound of combat will attract more guards.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
In between missions here, we learn about a faction that has not been introduced in this game.
Right.
This is stuff for people who had played Thief 1.
Yeah. Garrett's backstory, he was a street urchin who was brought in by the Keepers. This is the Knowledge Thief faction. They're kind of like a neutral keeper of lore, basically. And it gets a little bit confusing if you're not aware of this. There's just like a main keeper who is like Garrett's, I don't know, superior, like his contact within the organization.
His mentor.
Yeah. Who's like asking him to attend this service where a little girl is interpreting an older woman's prayer about the coming of the metal age.
Yeah, prophecy stuff.
Yeah.
This horrible thing's going to happen. This keeper friend has information about the person who's put Sheriff Truro on your trail.
Mm-hmm.
He says, listen, you can do this. I'm going to give this to you for free. Go finish your business and help with this prophecy. Like, we mm-hmm. know that you're involved in this. You doing this will advance things that need to happen.
Yes.
So we have to eavesdrop on the sheriff, who is at a mechanist seminary, mm-hmm. And steal these $800 worth of goods. This is where things get weird.
Mm-hmm.
In this level, it's great.
Yeah.
Because very early on, you make your way through, there's a little gatehouse. If you break into this, you find that there are bodies of pagans that are being processed.
Yeah.
A mask is being pressed onto their faces. You can find a switch and go into this kind of body pit where people are. Mm-hmm. So these people that they're kidnapping, so we know that there's a big thrust to get pagans mm-hmm. and take them out, and they're turning people into something.
Yes. You go down into the body pit or open it up. It's like, oh, these mechanists are people I could learn to hate, right? Yeah. Like, even Garrett's disgusted by this.
Like, he rolls his eyes at the pagans and the Hammerites. This is worse.
Yes. So like, there's a door that you have to kind of sneak up to and then listen at. Like, this is just going around the backside of the backside of this big kind of fortress, kind of deal. And you get up there and you overhear, like, you listen to this kind of lengthy meeting between between the sheriff and this man named Karras. Who is demonstrating a new project of his. He's a mechanist. And we're not quite clear that he's the leader here, but he is the leader of these people. He is showing Truart his new creation, the Masked Servant.
Yeah. This is the jump scare of his voice reveal here. And he's showing the Masked Servant. So we can, surmise this is what they're putting together. But then he has his other thing he's doing. He has a person he's abducted who has been modified with the mask. He says that removes their humanity. We're going to find out that's not true. Mm-hmm. As we knock people out with that, they'll say thank you and shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
They giggle sometimes. Like, it fucks them up.
Yeah. They're conscious, but their body is compelled to follow simple orders. Yeah.
Karras takes a street woman in and demonstrates a security feature of this. When the woman gets close, the mask emits a gas that dissolves them both under rust.
Horrifying.
Super cool. Also very clearly, not clearly this, but it reminds me of nanomachines.
Yeah.
The way the plot, this is like a contagious rust, except it just only hits organic matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Truart is really impressed and he says, like, hey, okay, well, I can bring you like 20 people on made up charges. So you can make these things basically for the aristocracy, right? Like, this is a way to turn people into robots that will be servants. Slaves is the better way to put it. And
employees. Karras, equals family members,
esteemed associates,
team players.
This obviously Karras is not just doing this for money. This is a religion. He's got a plan, right?
Yeah. After the meeting concludes, we can hear him talk about to his men about how he's captured a recording of the meeting. Mm-hmm. He's got a wax cylinder machine that's brand new. Truett is fearful of a scandal, and this recording creates some leverage. He's going to store the recording at the bank, mm-hmm. and the safety deposit key will be held in the pulpit. Yeah. So we're going to go to the bank next mission, but we need to make a copy of the key. I love that we don't steal the key.
Uh-huh, because that would be noticed, right? Yeah.
We take it and make a wax impression.
Uh-huh. So now we're not just going up to the door at the back. We need to get inside this, this religious facility, into the sanctuary, like right in the most observed and patrolled part of this.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. We get in, we get to see kind of the mechanist, how they work, this big, mechanical angel statue they use. And the fact that they worship Karras, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
He is kind of a god king on earth. Mm-hmm.
Do my bidding. I can't do the Capote voice. Yeah. But you grab the key, but all the stuff to make the impression is downstairs with the cog manufacturing stuff. Mm-hmm. And the basement, the workshop is patrolled, but also one of the ways through is a catacomb where you run into the one undead enemy in the game.
Yeah. A little Easter egg there. Yeah. When we get the key and we put it back, there is a patrolling mech that we'll run into. Yeah. There are two kinds of patrolling mechs. There are little ones and biggins. Mm-hmm. The little ones will not fight you, but they will get help immediately.
Yeah.
The big ones will fight you and kill you.
Yeah.
And they both have a furnace on the back because it's steampunk. If you shoot them with a water arrow in the back, you can disable them. Mm-hmm. One for the littles, two for the bigs.
You find a note Karras is giving feedback on the designs. I really need these to not
die
fall apart
water.
when it rains. Yeah. Yeah, they never fix it. They deploy it as is. Yeah. And the big ones, they will attack you. They've got a couple of different things, but the primary one that got me was them launching grenades. However, if you stand close to them, the grenade will bounce off of you.
It bounces off. It still hurts.
It still hurts, but it bounces and then it lands at their feet. And that is a way to take them out permanently.
Yeah. Same thing with mines. You get mines in this level.
Yeah.
Mines are basically each one subtracts a robot.
Yeah.
From this. This brings us into mission six, which is the second one I consider to be an all-timer. I love this mission. First City Bank and Trust, which this is the one where he's I've always wanted to break into the...
Yeah.
The biggest vault in the city. We have to go in and find the safety deposit box that the mechanists use. We don't know the number. We just have the key, mm-hmm. which means we have to hit the Hall of Records and get in there.
Yeah.
Through this. The Hall of Records is not hard.
Nope.
We can get in through the roof. There's a lot of ways to get in. But the vault is barred.
Yep.
There is a big metal stick through it. We have to go down to the basement
mm-hmm.
through here.
Yeah. And this is blocked by a bunch of patrolling robots, right? Mm-hmm. It's a rough path. For as loud as they are, they can sometimes sneak up on you, right?
Yeah.
Just because when there's one of them around, it makes enough noise to cover up the possibility that there might be two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't see in the dark or anything. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
But they are usually in well-lit electronic-y areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the end, there's a little bit of lights out because it's a video game.
Yeah,
playing a little lights out here. This lowers the bar on the vault. Then we have to go back to it.
Yeah. The upper floors are very well lit. You do not have a lot of control, and the rooms are quite large.
And it's, finding the path here. So the main lobby of the bank is suicide.
Yeah.
It's crazy. There's the mega mech and then a bunch of guards and stuff. But that is a hub because it would be. So that is a very desirable room if you can figure out a way to make your way across any part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It connects everything.
Yeah. Otherwise, I ended up doing a lot of this from the outside, doing a lot of the crossing and then just finding another way back in.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you get inside, we have to go up to the third level of the vault. It has these ladders and there are mechanical masks here.
Yeah.
We have to make our way up. And we use our key to get in and grab a gramophone. Mm-hmm. Then we just leave. Any way you want to leave is fine.
Yeah. Just run outside the building and then the mission will end.
Yeah. Mission seven, blackmail. This one I think is also good. This has a cool twist in mm-hmm. it. We have to confront Truett with the recording.
Yeah.
Hey, who's paying you to kill me? I've got this leverage.
Yes.
We have to sneak into his estate after he's had a big party. He's going to be sleeping it off.
Yeah. I like this because it's a way to show you that there is an upper class that is partying and stuff, but you are in the aftermath with some drunken revelers, but also a ton of just house staff who are over it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real cute.
Yeah.
There's a row of exactly three houses in the way, or before mm-hmm. you can go into if you want to steal stuff from them. It's very funny. The mansion's really big. Getting in the first floor is not a problem, but there are marble floors. This is the one with the hint that's like, hey, I tried to knock this guy's place over earlier. He's got these fucking marble floors.
Yeah. Hate this invention. Sucks. Yes.
They never said made floors of marble.
If only they invented shoes that weren't taps.
Yep. Yeah. So there are a bunch of doors on the upper floors that are locked where you have to have this mechanist devices. These devices, they're essentially keys.
Yeah.
And they're gears. But it's a consumable key rather than a reusable key
mm-hmm.
that you get from guards.
Yeah. So you got to go find them and then just have enough around to open up these doors. They're valuable shortcuts as well.
Yes.
The stuff that you end up opening.
You can also open them. You eventually can get a key mm-hmm. to open them from the other side.
Yes.
Like if you get on the other side and just open them up.
Yeah. So I love this little jump scare that happens. There's one way up to the upper floor that I found. And the hallway is, and the stairway, it's in the dark. And you hear some guards upstairs talking about like, oh, leaving their patrol to go grab some leftover food from the party. You know, like, oh yeah, and you don't fall over in the dark next time, you fucking klutz. And like, yeah, no, I'll turn on the lights. And so as you're standing there, lights go on and the guy's about to approach. So you need to like bolt and get into shadow as quickly as you can.
Hide behind this little pillar.
Yeah.
The game does this trick a lot and it's really great. They'll have guards do incidental dialogue that is like, I thought I saw something.
Uh-huh.
Earlier today when I was on patrol. Like, and it's very artificial. They're jokes.
Yeah. They're
but
jokes.
It is genuinely funny.
Bart's dead, tired of not having gone to Itchy and Scratchy Land.
Exactly. Yeah. The second floor is easier because there's more carpet here. Mm-hmm. And the third floor is difficult. You need a special cog to get there. There's a note that says the guard who lost it, he lost it in having a swim. So you gotta go to the pool room. There's a mechanical face on it just to look at people who are in the pool.
Here.
You can jump in the pool and get it first, mm-hmm. Which I ended up doing, but you can also go to a security room and turn it off.
I ended up looting this. It was actually really fun. I ended up looting this room before I realized I had to get into the pool. The face rotates at such a speed and predictably, like only in one direction.
Chases you.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I did that too. Mm-hmm. You run around the borders of the room taking vases.
Yep. It was really fun. And like, and it's only then that I found the thing to turn it off, which was good because I had to go into the center of the room next.
Yeah. You can go in and out of the center of the room without the thing seeing you, but it's tight.
Yes.
When you start heading up to the third floor, somebody sounds the alarm. And again, mm-hmm. you have that feeling like you did something.
Yeah.
So there's like a murderer here and it sounds like they're talking about you.
Yeah.
No, somebody else has murdered the sheriff on your way.
Yeah. And you are out of bounds. Right?
Yes.
You are here. If you're caught, like, oh yeah, obviously it was this guy.
Yeah, he's got the blackmail material on him.
Yeah.
It was him.
Yeah. So suddenly, like what you thought was going to be like, oh yes, I'm up in the all the heavy security is downstairs. Now you are at the center of the action as the guards are looking for who did this.
There's a really nice level design thing here. You have to get to the crime scene. Mm-hmm. But the two bedrooms here are connected by an attic.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of move through. That's really nice.
Yeah.
You have to get to the crime scene and there will be a guard patrolling it. This guy had to get donked. Mm-hmm. If I was playing this on don't donk anybody mode, it'd be very irritating.
Yes.
You have to search the crime scene for clues getting through that. And when you do, we find Lieutenant Mosley's key ring next to the body.
Mm-hmm.
We take this and we escape. And this is where we have one incredible mission after this. This is the beginning of the bummers to me.
Yes.
Yeah. These next ones are not the end of the world, but I don't like these next two missions very much. Mm-hmm. Then we get the highest high, and then it's all stuff I kind of have a problem with.
Yeah.
But 2/3 of the game is really great.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty good.
Two-thirds of the game is one of the best games ever made.
Yeah. And 1/3 of it is not a war crime. It's just I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
And some of it's pretty bad. Mission 8 I don't like. This is Trace the Courier. Mosley has an alibi, but the noose is tightening on her. She's mm-hmm. delivering a letter. So we're going to trail her and find out who's delivering it. And this is a follow somebody, but don't follow them so close mission. It's not very tight with that stuff, but it's also not very thiefy. You're walking behind them, you duck into alcoves and stuff. But mostly you're just trailing somebody slowly who turns around at random intervals.
Yes.
For this.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some creative ways to, like, you know, catch up with her. Like, losing sight of her is really bad because then, like, oh, right, I lost her. She's gone.
There's no quest marker.
Yeah. So, like, knowing when you can break line of sight and, you know, kind of, like, anticipate where she's going and get ahead. You know, because she's walking past guards, no problem. You will be caught.
Yes.
You know, like, that is a little bit interesting. Also, like, this is it's fine when it's the city, I think, but they start reusing environments.
Yeah.
This is the more forgivable of them, I think.
This is also the first mission. We don't know this to be true yet, but you do not get a shopping mission between this and the next one.
Yeah.
Which they don't communicate to you, which means you have to keep, like, hold on to stuff.
Yeah.
Through this, which feels a little bit unfair. Like, I understand it as a cool challenge through this. One of the things that I found frustrating about this is the game's quick save system. You know, I was using quick save to give myself checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't want to start a mission over.
Yeah.
You know, by any means. The quick save just does one slot, so you can quick save yourself into an unwinnable situation.
Yeah.
Is in these missions that have instant fails.
Mm-hmm.
If you happen to be looking away when she drops the letter, get fucked.
Yep.
Like, I was like, why do I keep failing this mission?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still following the fucking person.
Yeah.
I was following them at a distance. I couldn't see that they didn't have the letter anymore, but it's because they had dropped it and I just happened to be, like, watching a guard.
Oh, yeah.
When that happened. I found that frustrating.
I didn't run into that, but that's annoying. You can do a hard save anytime.
Yes.
It's just a matter of, like, a difference between making, like, checkpoints for yourself and making recovery points, I guess.
Yeah. And how much time you want to spend in menus.
Yeah,
you know, doing it, like, quick save is obviously quicker. Mm-hmm. She drops the note, so we want to read it before somebody picks it up.
Yes.
She was part of the conspiracy to kill Truard, you know, and us grabbing her keyring actually saved her from this.
Yeah.
She urges the recipient to run to the one place the mechanism won't go after her.
Mm-hmm.
Here, kind of previewing where we're going to go. We now have to wait and see who picks up the letter, and this little ratty guy picks it up, who's a pagan. The Hammerites are all these and those, and the pagans are all, like, tricksy, wixy.
Yeah, they're all little golems.
Yeah, we got golems versus, you know, Ultima Online's.
I hate it. I fucking hate the way the pagans talk. If this is what the first game is, fuck me.
You're not exclusively in Pagan Town, but you do spend a lot of time with the pagans. I don't particularly like the pagans.
Yeah.
The boss of the first game is cool as a concept. Mm-hmm. Like, the trickster is neat. You're fighting, like, a chaos god.
Yeah.
And it's a cool, you know, a trickster god is cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do not care for the pagans. And I don't care about their culture, which we're going to find out in the next level.
Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. We follow him. He's a little bit harder. He walks faster. He looks behind him more until we get near a graveyard and we see a bunch of mechanists attack him.
Yeah.
We see this trail of blood that goes to a mausoleum with a portal. We have to go into the portal.
Yes. And this takes us directly into the next mission where we are out of the city. It takes us into the woods where we are still trying to follow his trail. Doing rural forest stealth well before that was something that could be conveyed convincingly.
Yeah. It's a very lightly populated forest.
Yeah.
And we're following a trail of blood. That is cool. And the kind of incidental storytelling we're getting here is cool.
Yes. I like the set pieces.
Like, broke into this and massacred the people. Here. There's, like, village, and we're going to see ghosts of them.
Yeah.
Kind of explaining what happened. Like, these mechanists are bad dudes. They're not only harvesting people to make these faceless servants, they're also just killing these people. Yeah. It's a genocide. Genocide.
Yeah. Like, you know, you go into a house and, like, there's a ghost of a little girl who tells you, like, oh, I don't need my doll anymore. Dewdrop, please, you know, please take him. As far as I know, there's no utility to this. You just have a dollar in your inventory.
Yeah. And it disappears. In between levels, you can just drop it anywhere.
Yeah.
But you might, you know, think you might need it. The as you kind of move through, you see the village being massacred. There are mechanists around. Ultimately, we had to find the pagan shrine called the Gathering Place, and it has a huge mouth of the trickster. We had to place two ruby stones in the eye sockets of the face. I don't like how these ruby stones are placed in the level.
No, hope that you were picking. I just happened to have noticed them. I thought that they were treasure. I was like, oh, that's a big ass gem. I'm going to take that. And that was just because I was, you know, hiding out in the buildings that they were in. For fuck's sake, you know, the map that you get is not very good anyway. realizing you need these and then backtracking to get them and search for them seems like a nightmare to me.
Really frustrating. I also had a moment where I felt like I had done something clever that didn't work, which was I found one ruby and thought it was just treasure. I didn't find the other one. When it said you need two rubies, I was like, oh, these are like nature guys. Maybe what happens if I put two apples in?
Oh.
And I was like, that's really cool, right? Like, that seems like it should make work now.
No.
When you do, you go into a portal. Mm-hmm. Into this weird grotto of like land, the land of the you know, these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And this reminds me a little bit like a Kingsfield level almost.
Yeah, it's, you know what? I got that same vibe actually. Yeah.
It's like a treetop village split into four seasons that you make your way through. I do not like this very much.
No.
I just don't think it's a very interesting space, and removing the point of reference for like how spaces work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these do not have many individual rooms with purposes. It's a lot of like just a loft.
Yeah.
It's just with a pathway between it.
Here's a room with a beast man. Here's a room with these, you know, with these eight people. Yeah.
Yeah. Dislike.
I do like the grottos full of the eyeball plants though.
Yeah. The plants are great.
Yeah. But eventually, like, you start finding letters from Mosley among the people's possessions here. Truer was hired by the Mechanists to eliminate the pagans, and he also wants me dead for some reason. We don't know why yet, but
yeah. We follow the trail of blood down to a grotto that is full of Ents. We cannot take out, there are too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
We find the conspirator's dead body, and Victoria, this dryad character from the first game, talks to us.
Yes.
This is the person who actually took your eye.
Yeah,
we are doing an enemies to lovers plot in this. So Tumblr fans, get your boners ready.
Book talk,
it's time for book talk.
Yourselves. Yes. Yeah,
if you consume art exclusively based on the tags, get ready.
She says like, here you are. We have some work to do. Like, we need to team up. And Garrett wants none of this.
Yeah, but he's going to do it because he has to. Karis is working to, we find out, you know, Karis is working to rewrite the Hammerite text as part of his plot. He's trying to change the religion.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a party at Angel Watch, which is their big stronghold. We need to infiltrate it, get in, find out what his plans are, and learn what this project that has been alluded to, Project Cetus, is. Mm-hmm. Victoria's informants have been talking about it.
Yeah.
This is two levels in one.
Mm-hmm.
The first level is crossing the town on rooftops, aka the Thieves' Highway, which they just looked at and was like, oh, let's make Dishonored this.
Yeah.
Like, this is, let's just make the beginning of every Dishonored this.
Yeah.
There's so much fucking going on here. Did you find the Necromancer's Tower?
No, I didn't. I only read about that later on.
Yeah, it's neat. Yeah. There's like it's a little Evil Dead reference. You can read from a book and it summons zombies at you.
Yay.
There's just like a lot of treasure here. There's a lot of little incidental storytelling, tons of little apartments to go into.
Yeah. It's like you're in the top ramparts of all of these castles. Like, this is the rich part of town.
Yeah. This is the other level that I consider to be all timer.
Oh, when you read about this game, like, this is what everybody raves about.
Yeah. It's really good.
This life of the party mission. And there's like funny stuff too. Like, there are some guards who are drunk and arguing with each other, and they're so like, you know, they're like from different families and like insulting each other's employer. They're so distracted. You can just walk behind them.
Mm-hmm. They'll eventually also start shooting arrows at each other, and it's not deterministic who wins.
Yep.
Through that. You make your way across the city into a new map where there's Angel Watch. You can get inside through this hatch, and it's pretty quiet when we get in here. Like, it's the party does not seem to be going on this floor.
Yeah. Instead, you are just kind of finding, like, you know, stray cultists and what have you. And the person that you're here to, you know, stop, Karis, he's not here. Like, he threw this party, but he was not physically present. Instead, there are these gramophone players that have been distributed around the tower, not linearly, but you need to go and play all of them in order to like hear what he was trying to communicate to all of these nobles that he invited.
Yeah. That they're going to get the slave, basically.
Yeah.
The upper floors are tightly patrolled by these mechanist enemies. Mm-hmm. These are annoying. And then on 4-4, you start running into the servants, the masked servants. Mm-hmm. These are the ones that either giggle or say thank you.
Yeah.
When you kick them out. Did you find the kid?
I did not find the masked kid, no.
There's like a famous like child version of one of these servants.
Okay, I wasn't aware. So like the mechanical cherub. Yeah, like that is a scripted thing. And then he starts chasing you around and making noise. I thought that was like a I thought that was like a robot. I didn't realize that was like a little like a masked kid.
It might be. I thought it was a kid.
Yeah.
It's real weird. Nobody's explained what this is. It's like a thing within the fandom. It's invincible.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot die. So like you can't take it out. If you alert it, it's just gonna run around and make noise for as long as it can.
Yep.
All children, it's invincible.
Yes. a lesson we've learned throughout history. Yeah. Yeah. So like the servants are really creepy. I never got close enough for them to activate themselves. I just went through, you know, knocking them out. You can hear them breathing really heavily is the way that you know that they're around.
Yeah. Sucks. Scary.
Yeah.
We find that this kind of new mechanist Bible he's writing. This is in a locked compartment here. I read these new chapters, and this is Karras basically writing himself into the Bible.
Yep.
The builder, which is their god, they're talking about how much he approves of him.
Yeah.
You know, and approves of Karras's plan.
Yeah.
And Karras has resentment about how the nobility has treated him. This is our first hint that like he's not just giving people servants.
Right.
Out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah, like he is a striver who has been locked out of high society. Like he is a true believer. Like the builder is the Hammerite god, but he, you know, has megalomaniacal plans that involve, you know, going after these nobles, to which he had to kind of create this splinter sect to achieve because the Hammerites wouldn't go for this.
And he's suffering from dork voice. Nobody liked him.
Right.
You reach the ballroom here and we get the office key. There are mage enemies that pop up. They're not that different than, you know, they have a ranged weapon.
Yeah.
Here, they'll shoot magic missiles at you if you alert them.
Yeah.
To find the record player that reveals that sometimes the servants are going to have to be called away from their host for service by something called the guiding beacon. This is foreshadowing for the end.
Yeah.
Here, you're not just going to have access to your robot the entire time.
Right. So you get into Karras's office, like, okay, I need to find out like why he wasn't here, like what he was up to. And there's a record player in there, with a message recorded specifically for you.
He cut a vinyl at you. That's so funny. Like he went down and printed out like a specific record to talk to you.
Yeah. Hello, Garrett.
I assume you're hearing this. Yeah.
And he says, you know, you're going to repent for your sins. And you know, this alerts guards and stuff. You have to press a button to open a safe to recover a schematic for the Sadus project. A circle bit said that it is being used on Markham Island, and there's the name of a guy, Brother Cavador, also circled. You've got to escape from this tower, but you also need to get out of this part of town. So all of those rooftops that you crossed in order to get here, you've got to go back over them. And there are more guards out.
This is the trap that he sets for you. If you explore enough, you can actually turn off that alarm before you do it. And the way back can be literally nothing. It's very funny.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive. I didn't do anything clever to get there. I just explored the level in the proper order to find that button first.
Yeah.
Not the proper order, in the order I happen to do it in.
Yes. No. Also, if you knocked out enough people on the way in, like all you're going to encounter on the way out is civilians screaming.
Yeah, yelling at dead guards for them to wake up, and they're not going to wake up. And if they do, they're not going to be alive in a way that makes sense to you.
They will live, but not well.
Yeah, they're not even comfortable. They can't feed themselves. This starts, you know, the kind of bummer string to me a bunch. Mission 11, Precious Cargo. A lot of these missions are like two missions. And the first half of it, I like more than the second.
Yeah.
Through this. So like the first one, you know, the project supervisor, Brother Cavador, we're going to kidnap him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, also Victoria has sent an informant, Lotus, and we're going to help him out if we can.
Yeah.
And we start off on this cavern on Markham's Island here. The mechanists are drilling out this old pirate's cove and building this underground facility here. And this is an area I think you're in Thief 1.
Yeah.
And this first area is cool, this little island. Mm-hmm. With this like shaft that opens up under a lighthouse. There's an ice house that's going on. There's like platforming and stuff. You know, I like this.
You're doing a lot of like jumping off of vines and stuff. Like this is like a little, like this is jumping puzzle-y, but it is a nice enough touch to get like a little bit of Half-Life in this.
Yeah. You know? Well, and it's also a change of pace after what we've been doing.
Yes.
You know, a lot of the stuff I don't like about the last third of this game is in service of a change of pace, it feels like.
Yes. Yeah. So you pickpocket a key from the guard at the top of the lighthouse and get into the cold storage room, where you find out that they're not really like storing anything. This is a torture chamber. Lotus is kept in here. He's frozen nearly to death, barely alive when you get to him.
Yeah. They're just freezing. And he confirms what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, Cavador is interested in the Cetus Project, which is a sub. It's the Terror of the High Seas. He gives you a key, a wheel peg, and asks us to kill him at this point. This allows us to complete the ship's wheel in the lighthouse, which causes the floor to descend as an elevator. And we open this viewing point to see what is going on. The Cetus Amicus, the submarine here.
Yeah. And then we enter the tedious second part of this level.
Yes. It's not great. Like, we are going through this area outside of a submarine and our way into the submarine. We find like these locked cargo lockers, captain's log, and they talk about how they keep going to site KD. Cavador found some artifact that Karis is interested in.
Yes.
And the site is to be cleared with some kind of gas here. So this is just telling us where we're going to go next, but we have a lot of moving around in this to do.
Right. There's an empty storage locker that you need to get into, and the key for it is hidden extremely well. There are these two facilities, like two whole separate facilities that you need to thoroughly explore in order to find this fucking thing. And you also need to find another piece of the scripture. Like Karis's quarters were accidentally vented out of the ship or whatever. So you need to like do these very long and slow swimming sequences to like get down and find the book read this.
Do not care for it.
Yeah.
So we find a sample of the gas. We go down into this underground cave and find out a little bit more about this gas. It's called the necrotic mutox, and it turns anything organic that touches into rust, and this makes more mutox. Again, kind of like a gray goo.
Yeah.
We find Karis's plan. He intends to activate the servants and destroy all organic life in the city. He's going to lock himself in a little hermetic seal at the Soulforge Cathedral and just get rid of everyone else. Make a mechatopia with him as the only human.
Yes. Which is, I mean, not great.
Yeah.
You need to stop that.
Antisocial behavior.
Yeah.
So we go to the sub and we go into Locker 5 to stow away to go to the site. That's site KD. It's another mission where you do not get a resupply, which I don't like when it tells you that. And this is my least favorite mission in the game, is mission 12.
This sucks the stars from the sky.
Yeah, this fucking sucks. Instead of being in a cool building, we're in an area from the first game, which might be cool to you if you played the first game, the Lost City that's now being excavated. It's a bunch of caves that go between a bunch of little sites that have kind of little like Metal Gear Solid 5 buildings. Little, stone huts. And you have to do a lot of fucking shit.
Yes.
In this.
So you're looking for Cavador in order to, in order to kidnap him. Early on, you find some details about what he does. Like there's a patrol route. It's just like a list, like a list of the chambers that he goes to in order. This is not going to be very helpful. Like you're going to try and find him. The problem is, if he senses anything amiss, he goes running to his own quarters, like the safe area.
He walks around with guards as well.
Yes,
through this there are little lights outside these sites that are just Cavador alarms that show if he's near. And very funny, if he's back at home, all the lights are on. Everything's okay alarm goes off everywhere. And he goes back home, even if you don't spook him. He just goes back every once in a while to take a rest. These areas are not fun to navigate, like, I don't think.
No.
Again, when we're in areas that do not feel like a building, I'm a little bit bummed out. Through this. And this is also a lot harder.
Yeah.
Basically, for Cavador, for me, I got him in transit, but the only way I did it was because I had a gas arrow. He's wearing a gas mask, but you can take out his buddies.
Yeah.
I have no idea how you do this when he's in transit without a gas arrow.
No. And I don't know if you find one on site either.
I found one on site. Like, I didn't take one with me. There was one somewhere, either in this level or the last level.
They're rare. They're really high value. Rare. Yeah.
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 Then we had to carry him. mm-hmm. back.
Carry him slowly. So, like, you want to, like, kidnap him as close to the exit point as possible. Mm-hmm. But if he runs and goes to his quarters, it is probably the farthest away he is going to get.
Yeah. I stashed him in the dark and knocked out a path.
Okay.
To it, which was also annoying because there's more enemies. They cover each other more.
Yeah.
This is a really difficult level.
This took for fucking ever too. Yeah. Like trying to find a moving target with no indication of where he has been or really where he's going. Like the little like chart that you get of the order that he goes to places. Like it's not necessarily like sequential in the way that you would navigate these spaces where you can kind of like track him. And also there's no indication that like, oh, if he senses anything wrong, he goes back to this place. I searched around for him forever until I like looked up a guide. I had to do that just to end this madness.
Takes a long time. Does not work. And then we end up, this is also another mission, the next one, mission 13, that people hate because they reuse a mission twice.
In a row as well. I appreciate this. So this is called Casing the Joint. I appreciate the idea of this, that like you have a dry run to go and gather information about this mansion, right? And you're making the map as you go. And then when there are people there, and you're actually going, you know, to get it, going to actually get what you're after, like the information that you get helps you. This just feels like padding in the way that it is implemented.
Yeah. It's not a clever reuse of levels.
No.
So he's making Cavador was told to make 30 masks and 30 cultivators mm-hmm. From this ancient city. There's a mask dealer, Ricky Gervasius, who is holding an exhibition of masks. So we're going to go find them.
Yeah.
We have to go in at first just to check it out.
Yeah.
His house is huge. Mm-hmm. This first time we go there, it's not very well guarded.
Yeah.
But you cannot be seen in this. I hate that as a mission requirement in video games, just generally.
Yeah.
I get it. It makes sense here and stuff. And again, as I mentioned before, they're escalating difficulty, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a way to make this harder. I just don't like it. It's not how I want to play. Like, I want to play this game to be expressive. Mm-hmm. And my expression is donk.
All of the donks denied to you here will be repaid to you tenfold in Indiana Jones, Gary.
That is true. Well, I can't wait to donk. I'm a mania for donk.
Yeah. So if anybody sees you or if you get into a confrontation, like if you knock somebody out, you get the game over screen.
Yeah. Sucks.
Yeah.
Again, I get it. You're casing the joint. But mm-hmm. And there's not really any indication of where to go. When you're here, there are a couple of workers in the foyer talking about this missing cuckoo bird piece from the grandfather clock
mm-hmm.
That Gervasius thinks is important. So we didn't really come here with a plan. If those guys hadn't talked, we'd be fucked.
Yeah. No, we would just be looking around and maybe possibly we would have found it. So the cuckoo, like the bird from the clock, is like its location is randomized. It can be in a bunch of different spots. So you need to basically explore the entire mansion, which as before, you know, we said is, you know, fucking gigantic. Also, there are any number of cuckoo clocks around, and you also need to find the time that the cuckoo clock needs to be set to in order to open up the secret passage.
The only part of this level I really like is up in the library where mm-hmm. there's a sad little like story that happens.
Yeah.
There's a couple of ghosts that haunt this place and an evil ghost who will attack you who you cannot kill, who mm-hmm. spawns at this point. You find the story reading these love letters between them. Basically, somebody was the second command at a thing and wanted to get this job mm-hmm. and that he wanted to get and wanted to go away with the wife of his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
His assistant ended up killing them both to take the job.
Yeah. And then hiding them in a secret compartment.
Yes, in you can the find library. Their corpses. Yeah. It's a cool little short story.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, just like a little bit of thing, like the, some of the information that you need, is like in the M section it talks about, but as you look around the library, there is no M section. You have to find the bodies for the M section to appear.
Yeah. Yep. It's two L sections in a row, I think.
Yeah.
So we get this. We get some correspondence between Gervais and Karis saying there's going to be a cultivator there tomorrow, which we already knew. You know, he's mm-hmm. delivering them. We wanted to get those. We unlock this hidden staircase, get back out on the street. And then we do the same mission again with slight differences.
Top gun from the top.
Yeah. Bummer.
Yeah.
It's the day of the exhibition, but it hasn't started yet. So there are more people here, but it's not full. right, thing, which would have been a way to make this much more different.
Yeah.
More
That's
doors
a Hitman
are locked.
Level, though.
Yeah, exactly. More doors are locked. But we make our way up to the third floor, which we had no reason to go to the first mm-hmm. time. So we're in kind of different geometry, but we just have to make our way through the old geometry.
Yeah, you just have to do the same infiltration route that you took before to get up to this. The foyer up here has several switches that are going to disable differently colored lights. These correspond to the different exhibition rooms and their pressure plates. The pressure plates release gas that will hurt you.
Yep. And we eventually get the cultivator here. This is where vine arrows become interesting, or useful, rather. They're just mm-hmm. like rope arrows, except they'll work on metal grates.
Yes.
This feels like the developer making a patch item to me. Mm-hmm. It would make sense for things within the next level, the Soul Forge, to be all metal.
Yeah,
and they need you to have rope arrow functionality.
Yes, because the Hammerites, like, it's one of the funnier details you find in some of the texts from the Hammerites. They fucking loathe wood as a building material.
Wood just isn't good for them.
Yeah, yeah. As the mechanists are putting together the facility under the lighthouse, they're like, yeah, like, regrettably, we kind of have to use the existing structure here.
Yeah.
So we're just going to put up with the wood for now.
Knowing coated with iron. And this leads us to the last mission, which I think, if I wasn't fatigued, would be fine.
Like, yeah.
It's irritating. A lot of it's pretty tedious. But as a grand culmination, I don't know what else you do.
Right.
Here. And the thing you're doing is cool here.
Mm-hmm.
I am done.
Yes.
Like, with the game. I no longer want to play it at this point. It's a great game, but I really would like to be done.
Yeah. Also, like, this is a gigantic level. It does not feel scaled for Garrett's pace of movement.
No. It just takes a long time to get places. You're going to do a lot of backtracking through the nature of it. Mm-hmm. This might be a thing where I just don't have the, like, kid Stockholm syndrome thing. There are levels in Deus Ex that everyone hates, mm-hmm. like the sub and the Vanderburg base and stuff, that I do not hate.
Yeah, it's a different person's nostalgia, right?
Exactly. This might be somebody else's nostalgia, and I grant that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was pretty done.
Yeah.
At this point.
No, and this is a lot of going back and forth, even before you get to the second half of the level, which is even more going back and forth.
Yep. So Victoria demonstrates the findings. You know, the gas and the cultivators, what they do, sets off this chain reaction in a terrarium. So the gas turns things to rust, which then makes more rust.
Yeah.
And the servants are both.
Right. The masks contain both the gas, which, you know, they dug these up. Like, these are precursor artifacts, right? And if there's enough organic material around, it creates this kind of self-sustaining reaction, right? Like a chain reaction. All of these servants are being sent to the richest people in the city, the ones who can afford to have gardens. This is enough starting material to end the world.
Yep. To make Karis the last organic person, make everyone else a bot.
Time enough at last.
You're going to make fun of me now. Victoria comes up with a plan.
You sound like Stitch.
Yeah, it's hard voice to do. I can't do it, Cody. Uh-huh. The idea is to fill the Mechanist Lair cathedral with the Soul Forge with enough plant material to cause a big reaction, activate the beacon to bring the servants there.
Yeah.
So the idea is we'll make the reaction, it'll be sealed. Mm-hmm. He's sealing himself out, you know, in from it. What if we sealed him inside with it and sealed the outside from it?
Yeah. Got rid of all the servants and Karis at the same time. Right. Yeah.
And what I think is kind of neat is Garrett says, no, this is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to do this. It's a suicide mission. So she does it anyway.
Yeah.
She goes and he hears about it. He goes to go rescue her. And she's on the ropes. There's not enough plant material here. So even mm-hmm. if she succeeded in the plan, it wouldn't work. So she transforms into a huge tree. She sacrifices herself.
Yes, saying, I am plant enough, which is a really good, that's cool line.
Yeah.
And like, you start out in the kind of like the opening chamber of this gigantic temple factory. And she's there as this gigantic tree. And like it has propagated enough that like the like suckering like vines or roots have like opened up paths for you.
Yeah. Pretty neat looking.
Yeah.
So now we have to activate the beacon. And it says without Karis finding out about you, that goal cannot be failed.
Yeah,
Karis is going to talk to you.
He's talking to you, but he does not have any insight into what you're actually doing.
No, he thinks your plan is different. There's no way to tell him about your plan, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird little thing where they give you this goal that you cannot fail. It's huge, as we mentioned. We need to find these devices called the guiding beacons to issue a command to the servants to come back. Karis has the only exact beacon with him in his lab, so we need to make a new one.
Yeah, so we find, like, the schematic for it, which tells us, like, step by step, what components we need and which machines we need to go to and use. This is fine. I like this. I like getting back, you know, grabbing what you need and then figuring out how to use the machines. Like, there's some, like, puzzling in order to, like, get to the position where you can activate these, you know? Like, this is cool.
What's less cool is that there are very few human enemies here, which are fun to avoid and everything, and a lot more cameras and mechs. The stakes are a lot higher for getting caught. Knocking things out is harder.
Yeah.
Like, getting rid of them. And there's just a lot of them. Just a lot of robots.
Yeah.
You know? When you have the beacon, you navigate up to the upper floors and you can set it into a signal machine. And then we go to a bigger part of the level to reach the signal towers. A lot of these levels are basically two levels. The second half is the second half of the tower.
Yes. And so, like, you need to go and activate 5 of the 8 signal towers and switch them over to the instructions, you know, to call all of the servants back here. And upstairs, like, there's just a bunch more robots, but also you find some servants that are basically hastily made from worshippers. Like, you can find like Karis's writings where he's like, I don't have enough people to make into servants. And you start finding people in the masks in mechanist garb, like with blood all over them.
Yeah, wait, like, a minute. You know, my buddies are also people.
Yeah.
And what's it going to matter if I'm going to kill everybody after this anyway?
Yeah.
Good and creepy. The other thing. Karis is talking about his motivation on loudspeakers to you this whole time. He wanted to rely on you as an ally, but could not.
He was the guy who installed your mechanical eye in the first game. And, like, you didn't join the cause. Like, you are very powerful. You are a known quantity in this city. You know, infamous. And, like, you spurned him just like the rest of the nobility, like the rest of the city.
We could have been buddies, but now I have to end it all. We can actually go talk to him and see him in his lab.
Yeah.
Here. Again, you can just look at him. When you leave, the mission ends. We've done all the stuff. And Karis says, okay, I'm gonna fuck everybody over. It was nice knowing you. Starts his doomsday plan, but instead he's locked in there and the beacon brings all the robots back to turn him to rust.
The way that the animation of his face turning into a frown is very funny.
It's real good.
Yeah.
Great gift material for, like, a icon for a forum.
Yeah. What's a forum?
Yeah, if they still had those. No, it's one more than a 3M. We see, as we make our way out, we see a mech walking along, you know, speaking the sermon, and then it fades out.
Yeah.
So the mechs are still kind of speaking this, but it's kind of become a religion. He's gone now.
Yeah.
There's still the text about it, but it's like for future people to find. This is for our dark souls. People to learn about the cult of Karis.
Yeah. And the game ends with Garrett talking to his keeper friend. You know, like, he's just lost somebody who became very important to him. Like, this was fucked up. And he's like, okay, so, like, all this stuff, the stuff that happened with Victoria, Karis, you know, the gas, like, was this in the prophecy? And the keeper says yes. And Garrett says he wants to hear more. So, like, this is, you know, the growth of the character wanting to get invested in the cause because, you know, like, he has seen that it is true.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And this would be something that would be part of his trilogy. I can't remember what Garrett's thinking when Deadly Shadows starts. I know you're still doing thief stuff.
I can't remember. I think there's, like, a reset. Like, a lot of stuff in Deadly Shadows, like, that I didn't have context for, does come from this. Like, Victoria's lieutenants show up in that. But, like, Deadly Shadows is, like, it's about a hag.
Yeah. Like, primarily, Deadly Shadows was a gameplay function for me more than story.
Yes.
So, like, when did this game, you know, one of the best games of all time, a victim of it the time it came out, I think, in terms of, like, design and overall structure. That is going to be your mileage may vary kind of thing. If you are just extremely horny for Thief 2, there are things to like about these last levels. It's worth noting somewhere as well, this is one of the most fan-supported series.
Yes.
Yeah. Fans make missions and many of them entire campaigns, and they are considered to be as good or better than this.
Yeah.
Thief 2 is one of those games where if you want to, this could just be your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's neat. I really, really like this game. It is one of the things where, like, do you hold it against them that the pacing becomes a nightmare, that becomes this flabby? Like, this is just a mania that, like, pretty much everybody, like, Half-Life is like this, right?
Yeah.
Like even the best games that you remember all fell prey to this madness. And, you know, like, talking about them, everybody elides that. We talk about this, right? But, like, yeah. You know,
you're
like,
just remembering the highlights.
You're just remembering the highlights, right? All the other stuff kind of, like, gets compressed away. Like, it is weird to think of ourselves as critics in this, going back to an old thing, deciding whether or not to hold the design more as of the time against it. It's something we've struggled with, or, you know, like, dealt with. I don't know about struggled, but, you know, had to consider, like, through the entire run of this show. But here, with the highs being so high and the what were they thinking about the last third of it being so low, it's especially pronounced in a way that makes me, you know, just try to contemplate it a little bit more. And I don't know where to fall on it.
I think that the last level is, for me, largely downgraded in terms of fatigue, other than the cave one.
Yeah.
Like, doing the same level twice in a row sucks, but I think mm-hmm. that level on its own is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the last level as a final exam is fine to me. Really, it's just the cave.
Yeah.
Basically, when you're in nature zone, cave mm-hmm. and then the area with the
Yeah, the forest, yeah.
That I don't like. The rest of the levels are fine. There's just more of them than I want.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that is a sensibility that has not only changed with game design, but also with me, right? Like, mm-hmm. there was a time in which that would have been great for me as well. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to hold it against the game.
Yeah.
It is also, though, at the end of the day, like, I am somebody who prefers Dishonored because it is a version of this that leans more into the things I like.
Yeah.
You know, and leans further away from the things I don't like. But I'm so glad we did this. Like, this is a great game, all-time classic.
Yeah.
Hard to fuck with. Like, I think this is worth playing.
Oh yeah, no. Like, if your like first entry into this was an arcane game, like if it was a Dishonored, or, you know, like even like a later Deus Ex or whatever, like, you will be shocked coming yes. back to this and seeing just how much of it was already here, right?
Not just from an archaeological perspective, you will get different high highs.
Yes,
from it. Like, this does things that are unique and awesome. You know, well worth it. It's just the game that I'm not sure is, like, completely worth beating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, play it as long as it's fun. Once you get it and get the hook will keep you for a long time, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm really glad that the developer has at least moved on to do other stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and you have any kind of project or product and you'd like us to shout out, and you're any kind of marginalized person, we'd be happy to do so. Mm-hmm. This episode, I want to give a shout out to Max Newland, who does voiceover performance and event hosting, mm-hmm. narrates audiobooks, does video games, things like that. Commercials. You can find his work at maxnewland.com there, and you can find demos and a way to hook up with Max cool. if you'd like to hire him for anything.
Nice.
So yeah, check it out. Give him a book.
Do it. If you have thoughts on Thief 2, The Metal Age, or any of January's other games, The Legend of Zelda, The Binding of Isaac, or our premium episode, RoboCop Rogue City, go to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in by January the 15th. There should be, like, at least a day left as you're listening to this. The deadline is always the 15th. And if you have thoughts about multiple games, please separate them into multiple responses and keep them specific and concise.
Yep. And if you have thoughts about next month's games, the deadline is February 15th, and those games mm-hmm. are Mortal Kombat 2, Mega Man X4, and Indiana Jones and the Great Circle.
Yes.
The RoboCop and Indiana Jones episodes are premium. If you'd like to hear those are on our Patreon.
Yeah. Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and support us. We think it is a really good value. You get all of those premium episodes and access to whole other bonus shows, like even, you know, kind of like the mid-tier. You get Unfilmable, a great show that we do about horror movies, or Real Lich Hours, which is like this, but different and more in-depth for CRPGs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real fun. We think it's good value. If you can't do that, or even if you can, please rate and review us, subscribe, talk about us on forums and stuff. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
And join us in thanking our producer, Gwen. Big thanks to Gwen. What should they watch out for until next time? Okay.
Watch out for Taffin' About.
Yeah. Taff Daddy.